And being the first Wednesday, I got to get that right. The Wednesday, I've had the wrong day with Peter. It's my pleasure to introduce Peter. He's from Absolute Facts, and he gives us his time once a month for an hour, and he'll answer any of your questions if you've got them. We've got one already to send him away with. But first of all, how are you, Peter?
Yeah, good, thank you, Alan. Yourself?
Very well, thanks. Now, I think we got started on this subject because somebody asked us about, or you might have mentioned the glasses that have now got the cameras in them. And we were talking about how disastrous that could be. And somebody rang and asked the question. I know for a while there were pens that had a camera in it, and some of these grubbers were throwing that on the floor where a lady was standing, and they were taking a video of what they call upskirting. Now, we did ask you to have a look to see, A, whether it is illegal to do it, and I have a feeling it might be. But then some of these things wind up on... Well, I don't know. I've actually seen one or two on Facebook, which they shouldn't be there, and they go down pretty quick. But then you've got things like the dark web that I know nothing about, don't want to know. So, Peter, is it illegal to do it? And I would think it would be. But then is it illegal then to share it around?
Yeah, so the question was, or the clarification that you're after, Alan, was whether it's illegal to obtain the upskirting, so in other words, the person that's actually obtaining the image, as opposed to a person who may well have the images on their computer but may not have, or their phone for that matter, who may not have necessarily taken the picture. So the short answer is yes to both. It's illegal for both.
Right.
It's quite clearly states here. It is illegal to possess upskirting images in Victoria, Australia, under the Summary Offences Act 1966, which prohibits the intentional visual capture and distribution of images of a person's genital or anal region without consent. The act of upskirting itself is a criminal offence, and possessing the images obtained by such means can lead to serious penalties, including up to 2 years imprisonment.
Oh, good. So where does that... I think what you and I were talking about, there's glasses too, weren't we? Is that how we got onto this subject?
Yeah, it was through the glasses, not necessarily sunglasses, but they've got the cameras built into them, and whether it's about breaching privacy and that. And that led to the supplementary question, Alan, that you brought up, was about the video and audio legislation and laws, and whether there was any discrete difference between the two. And as I always say to everyone, my thing with video or pictures is that if the point of origin's a public place, then generally you'd consider yourself reasonably safe in respect to obtaining either video or pictures. And I'll always use the example, as I brought up before, about, you know, the paparazzi and what they get up to, and shooting pictures of your girlfriend in a bikini, Alan, from 3 kilometres away and things like that.
I wish.
Yeah. And with the audio part of it, always have been quite a lot more cautious and circumspect about the audio component. But I've just been reading up on it a bit more now, and it's probably less about the actual recording. It's when other parties hear the conversation, which has always been my rule of thumb as well, that you may well record conversations, but the real offence, to my understanding, was, or my guideline was, that if any other party heard that conversation, particularly a party who wasn't a part of the conversation, then you've got a bit of an issue. But I'm just clarifying a bit of that now, and it's... as always with these things, Alan, there's a bit of grey, a bit of grey there. And what it boils down to is, well, from what I'm reading, is it's about an expectation of privacy. And that also sort of semi-applies to the video aspect or filming aspect or taking pictures aspect. If there's an expectation of privacy, then you may well have a bit of a problem if you've obtained either audio or video, for that matter, where there would be an expectation of privacy. And obviously the best examples of that that I that come straight out would be things like changing rooms and toilets.
Well, I guess we've been on a touch that, but there's a case at the moment where someone's got about 300 cases against them, haven't they, over, something like that.
Yeah, that was in the medical field, if I think we're talking about the same one.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Yeah, so no, that person's obviously got a serious, problem in both senses of the word, yes.
Peter, I don't want to ask you anything about your own personal job because, you know, we don't want to get into that. But I'm going to give you a hypothetical and answer it on a hypothetical. So you're out doing a gig as a private Joe Blow's out doing a gig as a private investigator. He happens to tape something because he thinks it's relevant to his client. Can you then play that to your client or you're still subject to those rules?
No, absolutely. Again, but remembering it's the point of origin. So I can sort of use a sample example of this that happened to me a while ago.
Right.
Basically trying to establish whether someone was sort of slacking off at home and things like that. And as it turned out, behind their property was a park, so a public park, public access, public footpath, and grassland and things like that. And it just so happened that from that aspect, the person was undertaking some renovation work, and
with their sore back,
with their sore back or sore knee or whatever the example was.
Mm.
And that led to obtaining quite a substantial amount of video footage, which then became the subject of whether or not that was gained legally or illegally.
Yep.
And the consensus was that because it was on a public land that the video was being shot from, then that was just their unfortunate bad luck that they happened to have a public reserve behind their their see-through wire fence, if you like. So,
serve them right.
So that's a good example to be able to use. And I must admit, it initially there was quite a bit of reservation or hesitation about whether you could actually accept the footage or not. But eventually, the lawyer representing the client basically said, no, it's just their bad luck. It's taken from a public place. It passes the privacy laws. And it's just it was just unfortunate for them.
Peter, let me just chuck another one at you. We'll say Joe Blow, he meets his girlfriend down at a coffee shop in we'll say, a plaza, any old plaza, and you've been retained by his wife to try and catch him out. So he's in a coffee shop in the plaza, sitting in the middle of the food court. You rock up. And you sit down one table away, and you've got a recording device. So you record their conversation, and they're saying all lovey-dovey stuff. So you pack it up, and away you go. How would you stand if you went and played that to the wife?
Okay, so this is where the split between audio and video may come into play.
Yep.
Now, I would have zero hesitation, Alan, in providing the video.
Right.
But you would probably find that when I provided you with the video, you wouldn't be able to hear what's being said.
Because you would have stopped it?
No, well, because I think there's a couple of methods of doing it, but you wouldn't provide the audio.
Oh, wouldn't you?
You could. No, I wouldn't, because it's too risky, but you could possibly provide a report or even an affidavit to say what you overheard.
Oh, right. Peter, I've got to take a quick break.
Because that's in a public place.
Fair enough. We've got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
If you see your brother standing by the road with a heavy load from the seeds he sowed,
and if you see your sister falling by the way, just stop and say, you're going the wrong way.
You've got to try a little kindness, yeah, show a little.
helping hand instead of doubt.
And the kindness that you show every day will help someone along their way. You've got to try a little kindness. Yeah, show a little kindness. Shine your light for everyone to see.
And if you try a little kindness, then you overlook the blindness of the narrow-minded people on the narrow-minded street.
That was a Glen Campbell song, but that's an updated version again, which we're playing from 2020, and that was Jason Owen with Try a Little Kindness. So there's quite a few of these older songs out of the 60s and 70s that are being redone, a bit of different music and all that as we move through. Peter, you want to talk about... I call it shoplifting. You talk about it in other ways. So let's talk about it, because we've actually got a question we'd like you to have a look at. Well, somebody's rung in about it, but we'll give you that probably now, but we'll get you to look at it and come back with some figures if you can for next month. But let's talk about what you want to talk about, mate.
Yeah, so, Alan, behind all this was it's profit reporting season for a lot of the big corporates, yep, including, of course, a lot of the retailers. And there's been quite a bit of noise made about their protection of their retail workers, et cetera, which has now prompted the premiers of the country's biggest states have signalled they are willing to work together to develop nationally consistent laws to crack down on rampant violence against retail workers. So the country's biggest retailers are seeking new laws to stop workers being set upon after a 700% spike. 700% spike in incidents since the pandemic. The new laws they want include special workplace protection orders to stop repeat offenders, dedicated policing units, and easier reporting methods. So our Premier Jacinta Allen, to quote her, We will introduce tougher laws this year to protect retail workers from crime, and will continue to look at new measures to stamp it out. Retail workers deserve to feel safe at work. Absolutely. That's why Victoria Police got the powers they need to crack down on offenders.
Peter, one thing you said in amongst that. You said since COVID... Is there any reason why, if we just got more aggressive of COVID, or what's going on?
Well, obviously the numbers would have quietened off during the lockdown period, so it's coming from a lower base. But yes, I think in general, and we've sort of laughed about this when what we're experiencing on the roads at the moment too, Alan. People just seem to be far less patient and certainly far less forgiving. So. It's just seems to be the way people are at the moment. So to continue on that, yep, the line, a few other people have been quoted as part of this argument as well. A spokesman for Federal Attorney General Michelle Rowland said, and I'm quoting this, "All Australians have the right to a safe, secure and respectful workplace," unquote. And that department has encouraged state and territory governments to take responsibility for the matter, in inverted commas. So the New South Wales Premier saying that they're going to look at adopting laws that are already in place in the ACT, which, as I understand it, are probably the most proactive ones at the moment, and hopefully Victoria will adopt things along those lines. which, and basically the ACT has given magistrates the power to implement workplace protection orders, known as WPOs. In other words, saying to people that have been convicted that they are not allowed to attend those places of work anymore. And in fact, that can happen currently in Victoria, but it's not often instigated as part of sort of bail conditions and things along those lines. So other parties sort of commented, a shop distribution and allied employee association national vice president Bernie Smith welcomed the commitments of the state governments, and his quote was, the benefit of WPOs, which is the workplace orders, means we can keep repeat offenders out of our workplaces and prevent problems rather than having to pick up the pieces after our workers are injured.
I can't see, Peter, why anybody feels they got the right to go and beat up or abuse somebody in a shop. I mean, I saw a video of some woman throwing a coffee over the girl. Well, I mean, I don't understand how people can think that this is a great idea.
Yeah, look, and again, as we discussed before, I think people are just far less tolerant than what they might have been, whether this is a pandemic or lockdown sort of reaction the other way, I'm not sure. But again, the ACT has been quoted as the benchmark at the moment that hopefully we'll catch up to. And, of course, major retailers coming back to the reporting season part of it. Woolworths, Coles, Kmart have called for the introduction of workplace orders to prevent known offenders from re-entering a store. And that's the thing about re-entering the store. And we'll come up with some other interesting information in a minute. But yep. Apparently they're saying that the workplace orders in the ACT, they've issued 13 such orders or against 13 offenders so far, and they're saying that those 13 offenders were responsible for more than 300 incidents, specifically at Woolworths stores. So basically what the gist of all this is that it's the vast majority of it is committed by the same people on a repeat basis. Yeah.
That's terrible.
So that was quite interesting. And then, Alan, of course, Mr. Bunnings came out. Mr. Mike Schneider, the managing director of Bunnings, was one of the people that came out quite loud about this.
Yep.
And he's saying that Bunnings was hit by a crime wave of almost 27,000 incidents last year.
27,000 in a year?
Yeah, that'd be Australia-wide.
Yeah, but in 1 year.
Yep, with assaults and threats involving a weapon increasing by 60%. So referencing that as a part of an explosion in retail crime nationally that has seen a 66% jump in events involving a weapon and a 30% increase in violent events. And, of course, Mike Schneider of Bunnings was one of the 22 chief executives for major retailers calling for tougher laws to protect shop workers. And his quote here is, escalating retail crime, abuse, threats and violence is a safety crisis, and behind the statistics are real people who are being put in harm's way.
Peter, and a lot of these people, Bunnings are probably a little bit different. They employ some of the older people. But a lot of these, we're talking Macca's, KFC, and I don't want to start mention brands, but they're kids, 17, 18, who are being attacked. And they're the lowest paid too.
Yeah, sure. And then, of course, at that age, then they may well carry that stigma for a number of years, copping the abuse in the workplace. So so just going back to Bunnings for a moment then. So Mike Schneider added, the 50% increase in abuse and assaults in his stores over the past 2 years supported the case for a further step. And surprise, surprise, that was the use of facial recognition technology. And he also basically points out that it's a small cohort of repeat offenders, and he wants to identify them when they enter the store. and that facial recognition needs to be used both proactively and responsibly, and people need to understand that it's being used to keep them safe. So that was interesting. Now, and coming out of that article as well, or that press release, was I actually didn't know this, but Bunnings was actually found to have breached Australia's privacy law when it trialled the facial recognition in 63 stores in New South Wales and Victoria between 2018 and 2021.
Really?
The Privacy Commissioner, Carly Kind, acknowledged that the technology's potential, but found that its use was, in quotations, ethically challenging and breached the privacy of all customers. And going back to one of the points I brought up a little while ago, Schneider retorted by saying the data collected on customers was deleted in the blink of an eye with only known troublemakers identified. And that was the point that I came back to a little while ago when I said, I don't understand why they're not hammering that point, because 99.9% of the facial recognition pictures, if you like, or video, is actually deleted within seconds.
True.
So it's only when it registers a match or a potential match that then gets retained or flagged up the pole. So again, he's saying once identified, guards or police could be informed, and that would be, and they would be ejected from the store, and that then prevented team members from having to get involved, as they were at present being pushed, punched, and spat on. And I noticed they did release some reasonably horrific CCTV footage of team members getting bowled over or threatened with machetes, et cetera, et cetera.
Peter, I've got to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with more. Just before I go to the break, do you have any objection? I don't have any objection if they take my photo walking in the place.
No, and I think, again, I go back to the point that if I'm not a known repeat offender, then my image is going to be deleted in a split second. So, no, I have no problem at all.
I don't have any either. All right, well, we'll just take a quick break. We'll be back with more.
Willing.
talking to Peter from Absolute Facts. Peter, we had to take a break. You hadn't quite finished.
Yeah. So, look, again, just to round out that particular chain of thought there, again, anecdotal reports suggest retail crime is often caused by a small group of repeat and organised offenders as opposed to one-off incidents. So, again, I think the retailers are more concerned about the people that are consistently ripping them off as opposed to, you know, someone who puts a nut and a bolt in their pocket and walks out and things like that. So to finish off that, the last person that was quoted in all this, Australian Retail Association Chief Executive Chris Rodwell told a symposium on retail crime recently that it was one of the top operational, financial and people risks facing the sector and costs more than $9 billion. So I assume that means retail crime as a holistic thing. And he is also reported to back calls for the use of facial recognition technology. So, Alan, probably I anticipated your next question, which would have been, can I find out more about the Bunnings, the fining against Bunnings? And, yes, it is all there on public record in that the Office of Australian Information Commissioner, and they love their acronyms, and the acronym is oaic.gov.au. And in November 2024, probably the best way, if any of your listeners are interested, if they just put in their favourite search engine, Bunnings Determination, and that'll lead them to a PDF which actually summarises the investigation, the findings and the outcome, basically saying that Bunnings were judged to be breaching privacy and they had to stop. The thing that intrigued me was they'd been instructed the outcome. There's three outcomes, which I'll run through quickly. Yep. Not repeat or continue the acts and practices that led to the interference with individuals' privacy. So obviously they've switched the technology off. Yep. They're not allowed to publish a statement about the conduct. I'm not sure what that means. Yep. And they have to destroy all personal information and sensitive information collected via the facial recognition technology system that it still holds. And then interestingly, in brackets, after 1 year. So
they give them a year to get rid of it.
They got a year to get rid of it, or perhaps use it for purposes of investigation or charges and things like that. But they have to get rid of it after a year. It's always funny those things in brackets after 1 year. Never mind,
Peter. I'll be able to give you a question for next month. And it's strange that we've been talking a lot about it. Now, I'm not giving any away here because it was on Facebook. There was a photo of some guy in Bunnings and it was easily identifiable in Bunnings with a gun, with a shotgun. Now, a question that a listener has had, like, can you find out how many times something like this has happened? I mean, nobody should assault a retail worker anyway, and we all accept that. But how many times are people walking around with it doesn't have to be just Bunnings, let's not pick on Bunnings, but Kmart, all the big places, carrying guns in there? I mean, and this guy wasn't at the counter holding someone up. He's just walking around through the store carrying a shotgun.
I think there's been evidence as well of people carrying machetes or knives or even things like box cutters, and basically they fill their trolley up at whatever retail outlet they happen to be in, and when it comes to the point of trying to exit the store, if they're confronted by anyone or anyone, asks them to pay or, produce proof of payment and things like that, they just basically hold that weapon up and continue on their merry way. And realistically, I mean, who wants to get stabbed?
Oh, sure.
Who wants to get stabbed? You'd just let them go, wouldn't you, and hope that in time that, the CCTV.
Can you just see then if there's any sort of statistics, and we're talking about not just your asset protection where somebody walks in and puts a nut and bolt in the pocket, as you said, walks out the door, or or some other sophisticated idea, but we're talking about now people who are going into major chains with well, bolt cutters, guns and machetes. I mean, I can't even believe it happens, but obviously I saw a film, a photo of it, so could you have a look at that for us, please?
Yep, sure. Hopefully there'll be some stats around, although I wouldn't necessarily bet on it.
Well, we were asked by a listener, so the only thing I can do is ask you and see if you could come up with something.
Yeah, well, that may well be part of the I've mentioned it before. There's a product called Aurora that a lot of the retailers input their information into. And I think that was loosely referred to in one of the things that I read out before, although they didn't name it. But I'll have a look and see if I can find out some information about that and from that as well, whether they actually do publish any stats.
Absolutely. Now, what else would you like to talk about, Peter? I've just got to take a quick break again in a couple of minutes, but let's...
Sure. So one of the things that came to my attention, talking about retailers suffering at the hands of violent criminals, is someone has invented a fogging machine. That's F-O-G-G-I-N-G, fogging machine. And basically it's an anti-theft kit called Fog Security Systems, which deploys heavy opaque fog as soon as a wannabe robber breaks into the store. So presumably this is after hours.
Yeah.
And the fog basically effectively hides items of interest or pretty much anything and prevents theft. They quoted the CEO of a company called Smoke Shield, Natalie Vogel, said her company has been installing the system for more than three decades with over 200 put in nationally last year. I must admit, I wasn't familiar with fog machines, but it does sound like a pretty good deterrent.
I've never heard of it. Peter, I'll just take one more quick break and we'll be back with more. Peter, for the last 3.5 minutes of the show, we'll be playing Pink Floyd, Burning Bridges. Just very quickly tell us a bit about that, please, Peter, because you're our special person on Pink Floyd.
Yeah, so that's off the Obscured by Clouds album, which was a couple before the Dark Side of the Moon, and probably they're just starting to hit their straps, I think, Pink Floyd about that time. Organ Melody by Richard Wright, lyrics by Roger Waters, and sung by Gilmore and Wright as a duet, which is one of the better Gilmore and Wright, their voices really, really work well against each other. Fantastic. Terrific.
Well, now, what would you like? We've got about another 7 minutes. What would you like to talk? And I should mention, Peter is from Absolute Facts, and he gives us his time every month, and we really appreciate that. What would you like to talk about, Peter, for the next about 7 minutes?
Well, I'll tell you what I did do during the song break, Alan. I Googled to see if you could put a fog machine in your car to stop it getting stolen.
Yeah, can you? Does it work?
I might have another look at that when I get off air. Alan, is there a word that you can think of at the moment that's really, really annoying you in the English language that you'd like to be removed from the English language?
No.
Given current news topics.
Well, I would think if you're talking to a young person, like, every second word, like this, or it's not that I like it, like this, like that. What have you got, Peter?
I've gathered a little bit of a grievance against the word allegedly lately, because if you think of Paul Punker and everything that's going on up there, everything's allegedly.
Yep.
And it just annoys. I don't understand why we can't just say that someone actually did something rather than allegedly done something.
Well, my understanding is that if you do that, then you're prejudging them, and it's only up to the courts to make a judgment. We're not allowed to do that. We're not allowed to say anything other than allegedly.
Yes, I think it must be very frustrating for people reading out news articles and things like that, because it's just they have to be so politically correct, etc. But never mind. Now, something else that's come in, Alan, over the quite recently, the for small businesses has come into play is this after hours work and contacting employees after hours. I'm remiss in that I know it's only recent that the legislation's actually came in. Oh, yes, 26th of August that the legislation came in. So a small business, just to clarify that, is anyone who employs 15 persons or less.
Yep.
And it's about the right to disengage from the workplace when you've finished your shift or your day's work, and that discouraging employers, I guess, from contacting employees outside of their mandated work hours. However, again, it's like everything else, there's a test on it, and the test is unless the refusal is deemed unreasonable, and of course the contact, if it's a reasonable contact, the employer is making reasonable contact, then that's still okay. And it sort of then, how do you decide?
That was going to be my next question. How do you decide what's reasonable?
So again, the legislation's quite grey in the fact that, I get the gist of it, and I think it's a very good concept that people, you finish a 12-hour shift, you get home and the phone rings 2 hours later, can you come in, ASAP or tomorrow, or do an extra shift and things along those lines. I do get that, and people, employees probably feel obliged in some ways to do their best to cater for that. Then there's the whole other sort of question, Alan, about pay and extra pay or compensation, or a lot of people use the time bank or time in lieu, or as I jokingly say, Alan, time in the loo. That people can accumulate and then take days off against what they've built up a bit of a bank of overtime or hours that are owed them. So small businesses have to be aware of that now and be a little bit more careful.
Peter, does that include emails at night?
Say that again, sorry?
Would that include emails at night? The boss said...
Well, I think emails certainly form a part of it. I think the thing you want to be careful of is if you're an employer and you're sending emails, then you probably want to be a little careful as to the tone and the content, because they may well then turn around and and be used against you. So, I mean, one article's writing it up as a bit of a beat-up, saying it's a controversial new industrial relations laws that are hitting small businesses. So I think that probably there's probably a bit to play out on that one, and you probably wouldn't want to be the first test case because...
and you wouldn't want to be the one who pushes it that far, would you?
No, that's right. Although I do notice that larger corporations have been subject to this for a little bit longer, and I'm not yet aware of whether there's been any test cases or cases go through yet. Again, it's saying employees can refuse to respond to unreasonable after-hours calls from their employer. So I assume you could include emails in as calls. And they cannot. The employer cannot sack a worker for failing to answer the phone, an email, or text message if it's after hours.
Oh, that's fair.
But then they qualify it by saying unless there is a very good reason. So, frustrates me.
Well, the employer might say, "Well, that was a very good reason." The employer said, "And the employee said, 'I shoved it up my job, but it wasn't.' So, where do you go there?"
So I think the only winner out of that will be the legal profession,
Alan,
when they're, you know, on both sides of the coin about the define a very good reason. So employees can make complaints, of course, lodge it with the Fair Work Commission and things along those lines. I'm sure they'll probably sort it out in time. So it's supposed to give workers greater protections around workplace conditions, job security, and their ability to balance work-life balance. So I can see the intent behind it, but it always annoys me when they sort of don't quite go the whole way. And then
well, they give wriggle room, don't they?
Yeah, they give too much wriggle room, in my opinion anyway. So, and, of course, this is loosely termed, which has been a bit of a saying going around the world, basically, and it's in inverted commas, the right to disconnect. So that's what it's all about. So
Peter,
there you go.
We have to go, mate. Thank you for your time yet again. We look forward to talking to you again. It'll be October by then, won't it?
Yes, be Christmas soon.
Oh, we certainly will be. Peter, look, thank you for your time again. I've got to go. I'll be back on Sunday night between 6 and 8 with the Rock and Roll Hit Parade, and then I'll be back next Wednesday between 12 and 3 with Community Connections. Love to have you along again next week. Thank you for your time, Peter, and I'll talk to you next month.
Okay, thank you, Alan. Thanks, over mate. And out.